friends, welcome to the Financial Planner Growth Show. I am your host, Kurt Kersey, and on today's show, we are talking about the three key ways advisors can live life on purpose. We have a special guest with us today to talk us through these ideas. His name is Travis Perry. Travis is a coach, consultant, and speaker. He's a former financial advisor, as he likes to say, recovering financial advisor. He helps overworked advisors get back their time and really live their lives on purpose. He's coached hundreds of advisors in the industry, spoken on a lot of different stages. I was really excited to have Travis on the show. A few things that we talk about. We talk about a little bit of Travis's story. His dad died at the early age of 49, and just what that did to Travis, how that made him think a little bit differently about what career and life should and could look like for him and his family. He has six kiddos at home. He has been married to his wife for 16 years and been a coach and consultant and speaker for the last 12. Travis shares some really, really insightful knowledge around how advisors can protect their time a little bit more intentionally and where to start in that endeavor. So really excited to share the show with y'all. Let us know what you think, and excited to dig in. So let's dive into the show. Welcome to the show, man.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here.
Appreciate you having me on.
So we're here today to share, we're going to talk about the three keys to advisors' ability to live life on purpose, which is your whole business, right? Which is your whole tagline.
That is the tagline.
Yeah. So before we dive into that, tell us a little bit of your story. How did you end up in the role that you're in today?
Oh, well, thanks for asking. Thanks for having me on. So the whole live life on purpose tagline really resonated with me just as a young advisor, getting started, working a lot, having that whole pressure of having to work nights and weekends and having, you know, the management say, you've got to work nights, you're not going to make it, and just do this for 5 years and then everything's going to be okay.
Yeah.
And so I pushed a lot against that because I wanted to be there with my family. And then about right after I graduated from college and I was about ready to go full time in the business, my father passed away, and he was 49. And it was a really sudden occurrence. This wasn't something that any one of us were prepared for. And here I was, you know, a brand new financial advisor, trying to help mom, trying to help the family. And literally, I bought the casket. Mm-hmm. I directed the funeral. I did everything that someone else twice my senior would be in the, you know, role to do, but as the oldest son in the family, it kind of fell upon me, and people just expected that I would do it. So as I was doing that, nobody wanted to write a dad's obituary. It just happened so sudden. Everybody's grieving. I show up the day later after traveling down from Utah to California to be with family, and that kind of fell on me. Mm. So I interviewed people, I talked to them, I asked them, you know, because I know dad from parent, you know, son relationship. Mm-hmm. And something pretty amazing happened while I was doing that, that I realized I had all of these hopes for my dad. Like, and I thought he had all these great dreams and all these things. It turns out through that experience that I realized dad actually did live his life. Mm. His life wasn't cut short. Mm. His life wasn't something, you know, that people are going to be upset about that he lived a certain way. He lived his life on purpose. Mm. At his funeral, it was standing room only. There was probably over 1,000 people there.
Wow.
And when I got up to speak, it was breathtaking. Mm. I've spoken for a lot of groups, but when I got up to, you know, obviously I'm emotional, I'm a wreck. But seeing all the people there, all of his friends, all of his family, my dad didn't have an enemy in the world. Mm. And he was one of those kinds of guys that he was a plumber. He would show up to people's houses, do the crappiest work. Like, it's the crappiest job. Nobody wants that job, right? And so growing up, I would go to work with him and I'd watch him just work miracles with people that they would follow him around because he was so fun to talk to. Mm. He would just ask them questions and he would learn about them. And I realized so many of these relational things from my dad by watching him. But yeah, there were probably more people that I didn't know at that funeral than I knew because of his work, because of who he was in the community. Mm. And I realized that, man, after that whole event, I was upset. I was dealing with grief. But I made the conscious decision, I'm going to live my life on purpose. I'm going to give it my all. And not every day is going to be 110%. Right. You have sick days. Like, you have days where you just don't want to show up. But I realized that it doesn't just have to be business goals. It's everything in life. And I wasn't doing what I thought I should be doing at that time. And I know that, you know, God's in this change that I experienced. And I started cleaning up my act, having a better relationship with my wife. We got healthier, ran more, did triathlons. I started, you know, working out more and eating better. We totally changed our lifestyle. And that overflowed to all these different areas of my life. And I realized, dang, I even need to leave the financial planning industry. So, and I won't take too much more of that, but that's kind of where I got to realize I need to make all of these changes. That ripple effect, my dad's, you know, passing and death, really made me look at my own life, look internally, and then change everything.
Yeah, and part of that story is education, right? You went and did a lot more education than I would ever care to do. Well,
let's just be straight. More than I ever imagined I would ever want to do. And quick background there, I was the first one to go to college and complete a degree in my family.
Oh, wow.
First ever. So I don't know what I was doing. I was just following what, you know, counselors at school were telling me and how to get through the process. In the meantime, I married the love of my life, my amazing wife of 17 years now, almost 17 years this December.
Congratulations.
And her father, thanks, her father was a college counselor, right? So he's like, this is what you need to do. And our first interaction was, so are you going to get an MBA? I'm like, MBA? I'm a freshman. Like, I don't even know what I'm doing. Sure.
Yeah, why not?
And actually, that was my dream. I was supposed to do an MBA. But after I cried tears of joy doing my last test in my bachelor's degree, I'm like, now I can just focus full time on my work and be this advisor that I've always wanted to be. I knew pretty quickly that I needed additional education. So I started the CFP process. And CFP was wonderful. Except as I was working with a lot of young couples, you know, professionals that made a lot of money, but didn't have a whole lot of assets to speak of, their biggest need was just learning how to budget so they could get an emergency fund so that they could, you know, invest later or or take some money and put it in a different spot from their business, you know, and we'd work on that and I'd consult with them. But then I started to find that the biggest need that they had was with their relationship, with their spouse. And a lot of them overworked. And so I got trained as a time management consultant and I brought that into my business.
Oh, interesting.
And I left a firm that I was working at for years and started my own gig. And that allowed me that freedom. And so I would do the time management consulting along with the financial planning. And it worked really well until I couldn't figure out this relationship piece. Like, I can teach them how to be productive, but it doesn't last. It didn't work. They need me still. They still need me to coach them forever. I'm like, to me that wasn't effective. And so I decided to look more into this and got a whole bunch of training. I went to a lot of the big names in the industry, Bacharach and others, who helped me to understand how to be better with clients. I invest a lot of money there. But then the thought was, in order for me to really be the best I can be, it's for me to go and get in the trenches and figure out, how does human behavior really work? I hear a lot of philosophies, but what is it that makes people tick? And what about relationships? Like, I know just a little bit from what I've seen growing up, from my church, from other successful, you know, marriages, but what really works and how can I help a wide array of people? And so I went back to academia and got a master's in psychology. And along the way, I picked up a PhD in family and human development.
You make that sound way too easy. Just, you know, picked it up while I was there.
While I was there, might as well. No, that was actually really hard for me. That was incredibly stressful. And it's not the type of learning that I really enjoyed because it was very much theoretical, academic, writing papers, doing research. It wasn't a whole lot of practical. But I knew the whole way through that I was going to take all this learning and knowledge and bring it back to the industry essentially that I left so that I could help guys like me and others who are maybe even further along, more mature in the business, to better manage their time and their money, their own personal, you know, budget, but also those relationships, their health, so that they didn't burn themselves out.
Yeah. Yeah. So much of the time we kind of see the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. If we can just do more activity, produce more clients, bring on more new business, to our own detriment of either burning ourselves out or bringing on more clients than we really have capacity to serve. Right. And so really architecting that time well and that intention well, I think is the powerful work that you're able to do with those advisors.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right in that it's the model of business. You're starting out, so you're taking all the clients you can, and then you realize, whoa, I need to hire somebody, and then you've got to scale it, and now you're managing, and now you've got to learn how to be a good leader. Like that doesn't just come naturally for most people.
Yeah.
And so and I have a lot of friends who are speaking on that topic. Leadership is always a hot topic for management. But then it comes down to the time management that I was originally trained on was from the E-Myth author who really did a fantastic job, Michael Gerber.
Yeah.
And he's done an amazing job of helping people be more productive.
Yeah.
The problem is, as I was teaching a lot of these principles, I essentially was trained by one of his very first, original coaches. So I'm Michael Gerber's grandson.
Yeah,
I'm a Gerber baby.
That's awesome. That's great.
In a different sense.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness, that has so much play on life insurance too. That's funny. But it's interesting to me that as I was training these guys, one of them in particular was a mortgage guy who they had 1,500% increase in revenue in 1 month.
Whoa.
1,500%.
Yeah.
He had a Forbes article on him and they interviewed him to find, what are you guys doing? Like, this is mortgages, but what are you doing? He had an amazing business model, and that was, you just help people who have really good credit scores.
Yeah.
No brainer, right?
Yeah.
But he didn't just do that. They had such an awesome process that they could close loans in a week. So the people that did really well managing their money, it was a reward. So people wanted to work with them. And they did such a great job getting people in this box. Actually, that was the name of the company. And then they were able to do great things for them and really provide amazing service for these high-end clients. It grew just crazy. So he was working 80 to 90 hours a week. And we did some of this training together, which is kind of the Michael Gerber model and others kind of mixed in. But as we got to the end, he said, Travis, this is kind of scary. You've helped me become really productive, but now I'm really tempted to spend all this extra time working.
Yeah.
So that's the conundrum. I call it the productivity myth. If we're just productive all day long, we're just really, really productive, what's going to pull us away? If we do not have outside involvement in health, in things we like to do with our families, if those relationships are not where we want them to be, are we motivated to leave work to be with them? Probably not so much.
And yet the only way to get them to the place where we want them to be and be healthy is to invest time and energy in those relationships, right?
That's exactly it.
Yeah.
And we know that time is finite, right? With my dad and everyone else could relate. They've got relationships where they know, hey, one day they're not there anymore. Grandma, grandpa, they pass away, they die. And as a man of faith, we see them again.
Yeah.
But the reality is this is our life to make that relationship happen.
Right.
So that is at the forefront. And now I've done a lot of this training, but I find that most people, when they're really honest with themselves, the number one, two, and three priorities in their life are typically about family and God. Everything else is a lower priority. Yet, how much time are we spending in those lower priority areas? Some of which is needful, but I think a lot of times, especially as financial advisors, we're overworked because we allow ourselves. Mm-hmm. We're entrepreneurs. Like,
that's right.
We've got to make this business work.
That's
we're
right.
going to put it all in those 5 years to make sure we're successful, and then we can relax.
Yeah, yeah.
But unfortunately, that drive, those 80 hours a week, most guys can't ever ratchet it back.
Yeah.
Because that becomes their habit.
Yeah.
So that's part of what I help people do is ratchet it back, get to the spot where they can truly be productive.
Yeah.
But also make time for their family.
Yeah. I love that. So let's talk about these three key ways. You know, if I'm an advisor listening to the show and I know that I am overworking myself, I know there are areas in my life where I could be more productive, more efficient with my time when I'm at the office. Yeah. And I would love to get that 20% back so that I can invest it in my family, in my health, in my faith, whatever those things outside of the office that I need to develop more fully so that I can enjoy the fruits of my labor, right? Ultimately is what we're talking about. And so talk me through what's the first thing that we need to be thinking about as an advisor to really make that become a reality for us.
So number one is that you have to have internal motivation. I mean, we've got Tony Robbins, we've got...
whatever you may think
whatever.
Of Tony.
yes.
Yeah.
You know, we got a lot of motivators out there. Mm. But what I found that every advisor truly needs internal motivation that will drive them every single day. Mm. If they don't have that internal motivation, then they're going to be... The only way that they're truly going to be motivated is for these external motivators, like a Tony Robbins, like others, and they're listening to the books. They're going and the audio is going in their car, you know, they're pumped up with their music to come in or whatever. That's a lot of external stuff. Mm-hmm. And so much of that is noise. Mm-hmm. So much of it, unfortunately, and no offense, Tony, if you ever listen to this, so much of it is rah-rah. Mm-hmm. And it lasts while you're there. And then when you're gone, it's gone. Mm-hmm. So what do you do? How do you create that internal motivation? The internal motivation is values. Mm. We talk goals as financial advisors, right? We're going to help people get to where they want to go. That's their goals, right? And that's my goal, is to help you get there. Well, that's all fun and games, and that's good. But underneath that, and actually good financial planning is built on values. Mm. It's in the financial planning text.
Yeah.
It's there. It's part of financial planning 101. Mm. Yet we don't do it ourselves. Mm. We don't ever look at, well, what are my values? Mm. What do I truly believe? Mm. Why? Because it takes time and it hurts. Mm. So what I tell and what I teach people to do is write their own obituary.
Oh, wow.
Sit down and write your own obituary. Not something morbid.
Yeah.
Not something like, this is how I died. And you know what? Stephen Covey has a very similar process, and he was great at understanding, you know, individuals. But I do it in a different way. I have people write their obituary, and then I have them look at what it is they truly value about their own life. Mm. And if you can do that, then those are your lifelong goals.
Yeah.
You don't ever have to set goals again.
Yeah.
That's it. That's your map. That is who you want to become. Not just some checkboxes accomplishments, but who you want to become. With my experience with my father, the reason why it just changed me so much was because I realized that I needed to become something like my dad became somebody. Mm. And I needed to change because I wasn't really happy with where I was. I didn't look at my dad going, wow, he accomplished all these things. Nobody's ever heard of Greg Perry unless I'm telling you about him, right? Mm. But his way of being was, and the reason why I had so many great friends is because he lived his values. Mm. So that's it. That's my first tip.
Yeah.
Who are you? Those values become your internal motivation. And then I read them every day. Yeah. I read the goals that are then associated with those values, and that motivates me. Mm. I need to be this guy. Mm. I need to be the family guy. Mm. I need to be the faithful servant of God that I know God wants me to be. Mm-hmm. I need to be there for my kids. So I take them on daddy day. So you know, I do these things, but that's the person I need to be.
Yeah, I love that, actually taking that to fruition of performing the exercise, right? I think a lot of people talk about, or have heard others talk about, like, what do you want people to say at your funeral?
Yes.
But not just saying that in like a rhetorical sense and then going, gosh, am I really living that way? But actually sitting down and saying, okay, what would I want aspirational identity, someone to write about me if I were to pass away? Like, what do I want that obituary to read? I think that's such a powerful way to not just audit how are we living our lives today, but then, as you said, the habit of reading that daily and understanding, okay, I have these goals, these things that I want and need to accomplish in my life to put food on the table or create the life of our dreams, whatever the case may be, but connecting those back to, okay, and how does that really help me become the man, woman, husband, wife, leader that I know I'm called to be or I'm designed to be?
Yeah.
That's really powerful.
Thanks.
That's really powerful. Okay, now what do we do with that, right? We have the habits, we have the values.
Yeah.
I don't believe in the, like, just speak it to the universe and it'll come to you, right? No, so no. What's the next step?
And that's powerful. It's powerful to have that identity. Mm. And you hit on it. Mm. That's the key term. The key term is your values. It's your identity. Eric Erickson was a developmental psychologist, and he found that if we can really come to grips with our identity, then everything developmentally after that is just living that out. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people that struggle, it's because they're maybe setting goals that aren't in line with their identity or their values.
Yep.
So once you have a really clear understanding of those, which most people don't, they think they do. And an intuitive, like, oh, this is who I'm supposed to be. Mm-hmm. But if they really dug deep, they'd find out something else through these exercises. But once they do, now it's time to be productive. Mm. Now it's time to say, okay, I need to be productive with the time that I've been given on this earth or every day. Mm-hmm. And take that time and not try to manage it, because that old school time management, even though I talk about time management, it's really making time. Mm. Making the time, the prioritization of that time, so that you get the stuff done you want to. Mm-hmm. If we're not careful, we can scroll away our time. We can toil and work our way. And the reason why I come back to the industry with this knowledge is because 3 out of every 10 American is considered an overworked, maybe even workaholic. Mm. And those tend to be financial advisors. Like, it's a big percentage. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting to me that we as financial advisors, and I say this in the industry as a recovering one, that we struggle with this, because obviously, especially if we're solo, there's nobody there saying, hey, it's time to go home. Mm-hmm. And your assistant clocks out at 5 and they're gone, but you might still be toiling, thinking, this is my business. This is what I need to do, because you're an entrepreneur. So I have them create an ideal calendar. And that ideal calendar looks at all of the activities that they do in their business, but then also everything in their personal life. That way, that is kind of the gut check. Yeah. Am I doing what my values are?
Yeah.
Am I performing that?
Yeah. It almost makes me think of, like, you know, I forget who the quote is attributed to. It might be Jim Rohn or somebody like that, but that show me your friends, I'll show you your future. It's kind of like, I think of it as like, show me your calendar and I'll show you your future, right? I'll show you your whether you're on track to actually move towards that aspirational identity, or you're investing your time in areas that actually isn't moving you more towards that.
Yeah, it's so true. So true. So then a lot of what I teach is, how do you create that ideal calendar?
Yeah.
We don't have enough time to even get there, but if you can get the ideal calendar, and I actually have an article on my website that teaches 3 basic steps of how to create it.
Oh, wow.
So I make that available to your listeners. You can go on my website, travisperry.com. You can download that. And the idea there is, the ideal calendar is the centerpiece. And so everything that I help people do with advisors, so I help them to become productive so that they can stop working 80 hours. And so that they can get down to a manageable, you know, 40 to 50 or even less. And then even help them scale business and help them to leave. That way they can then reinvest that time back into these other areas. But it truly starts with the business first. We can ratchet that down, we can be productive, then we take that additional time and we plug it into the other areas of life. We only have 168 hours a week, 24 hours in a day. So it truly is the equalizer. We just got to make time for the things that are valuable to us.
Yeah. So, you know, it sounds very practical and simple, right? Easy to talk about, maybe harder to apply.
Absolutely.
So talk to me a little bit about, you know, I hear kind of even in my own life, I'm hearing like, okay, so really nail down your values. Think about how what legacy you want to leave is maybe an overused term, but that's kind of what we're talking about with key one, right?
Absolutely.
Key two is then map out how am I going to invest and spend my time? What constraints am I going to put around work? How do I make build that time to be as productive as possible in the hours that I have allotted for that? And then where am I going to invest these other hours? What do you say to someone that looks at their values and then looks at their calendar and goes, I just don't have enough time?
Yeah.
Do you hear, is that a common question?
Yeah, that's the idea. And that's this kind of, I think all too often stated idea that I am constrained to do X, Y, and Z. Mm. But if you can prioritize your time, that's part of what I do. And it's step two in the article, it's on the website. How do you prioritize it? Because before you ever create an ideal calendar, because you and I, we can sit down and we could, oh, this is ideal. I'm going to be in Hawaii this week. I'm going to be in Florida right. that week. I mean, we can do that. Mm-hmm. That's not, you know, realistic. Mm-hmm. So you make incremental changes towards that. Mm. And that's really effective. Mm. But most people are wasting 15 to 20% of their workday. Mm. And they're wasting it by multitasking away, trying to do two mm-hmm. things at once, or, you know, they're on social media a lot mm-hmm. more than they should. Mm-hmm. And think, well, I've got to understand social media to put, you know, ads out there, to understand marketing. There's a lot of justification.
Yeah.
There's a lot of water coolering. There's a lot of having conversations with people that really aren't going to help mm-hmm. either your clients or you to further along. So there's a lot of wasted time. In addition to that, a lot of advisors could be outsourcing a lot of the things that are lower on their business priority list. Mm. And so I help them to go through that. And I have some great, you know, schemas to help them realize and put a mirror in front of their face business-wise. Am I really being as effective? Am I doing a $20 an hour, you know, something that my assistant could mm-hmm. be doing, but I'm holding on to it for some emotional reason?
Yeah.
Logically, it makes total sense to get rid of that.
Yeah.
Have someone else do it. But advisors aren't picking up virtual assistants. They're not hiring more people because there's a lot of times this idea that, like, I really like that thing.
Yeah.
I like to create plans. Well, everybody does. But if you're an advisor, you don't have to do that. You could have a pair planner do that.
Yeah.
And you could charge additional for that hour. I'm just throwing this out here. These are some ideas.
Sure.
So they don't think they have the time. They have just as much time as anyone else. They just aren't willing to make the time.
Yeah.
But it's not until you really understand your values, are you ready to make a change. Mm-hmm. If we just come in shooting it with ideal calendar, you just need an ideal calendar, it's not going to make change. Mm-hmm. You have to have fundamental, heart-wrenching change mm-hmm. that comes from within.
Yeah.
And then that will create the calendar.
Yeah.
Your priorities become what you do every day.
And that kind of ties nicely into key number three, right? What's the other motivator that helps us get there?
So, I mean, all you married people, you all know the most important person in your life is your spouse. Mm. And for me, this was interesting because it about, I'm not going to tell you all the sad sob stories of my life, but I think all of us have challenges in different ways. We all have things that we struggle with. And right before my father passed away, we had only been married for a couple of years. Mm. Both of my wife's grandparents passed away in the same, like, 2 or 3 month period. And then my grandmother passed away. So we dealt with death wow. quite a lot. And then my dad passed away really suddenly. So we had some really good conversations about what we want life to be like. Mm. And then her parents, the next year or so, divorced. Mm. And this was like, what? We mm. thought you guys were having this happy marriage. We had no idea.
Wow.
No idea. Just blindsided us. And they're two really good people. We love them. That was really a struggle. And then my wife had some major health issues. Mm. The reason why I even mention this is all of this struggle, all of these challenges made us really have to come together. Mm. Like, we had to be really strong. We had to help our family. We had to help our siblings. We were the oldest really in the family. I was number two, she's number one in her family. So we were really there to help our younger siblings out. And we really had to be the model of a good marriage to them and our friends. And so we made the conscious decision that we're going to always work on that relationship. It just so happens that at the same time, I'm learning in psychology about how important relationships are, my PhD in family relations and family system, and it clicked. It clicked in my mind. It dawned on me, Travis, the key to change, lasting change, is your spouse. So we made huge health changes. We decided to homeschool our children. We moved to where we thought would be, you know, outside, you know, of the city environment. Like, we've done all these things, but we've made all these decisions together. And we've worked on our relationship, our communication, intimacy, all of these areas, finances, because we knew that if we're going to make change, we have to do it together. Can you still have your personal identity? Absolutely. 100% we should. But there's even things that we do, like I wanted to do a triathlon. She supported me from the sidelines. Yay! You know, she wanted to do a half marathon. So we actually trained together. That was my way of supporting her.
That's cool, yeah.
So we ran it together. I will never do that again. Like, that's just, it's not in the cards for me anymore. But I think you need to do those things. And research shows that when you support your spouse in the extra things, things that aren't, you know, your favorite thing, that goes a long way. But you still need to have shared goals. Shared goals and values is what I did my dissertation on, and we found that couples that had really high percentage of shared goals, they were also happy individually. They loved each other, they had great marital relationships and satisfaction, and those that had shared goals financially achieved them.
Because
you're doing it together.
Right.
You're on a team.
Yeah.
So this idea of trying to make change in your time, it just clicked that you need to have your spouse on board. Now, is your spouse the whip cracker? Do they show up to your office and with a clipboard, you know, doing your thing? No. It's more of a supportive role. And it's more of you're going to talk now about your ideal calendars together. He or she should have an ideal calendar like you do. And you have conversations and you support each other on what's going on during that week, that month, so you stay on track.
Yeah.
I don't know how couples that don't have these correlating meetings, that don't talk about their time together, how they get anything accomplished, or what they do, or when they find time to talk about it.
Well, it's likely that they don't, right? With the divorce rate in America being what it is, that could be part of the problem, right?
That's it. Yeah, and that's what fueled me is that knowing that my mom and dad, you know, they had a good relationship. There was rocky things I saw. And a lot of it had to do with money, but a lot of it had to do with time. And then my wife and her, you know, her parents and their divorce situation, it really hurt me. And I took it very, very personal. And I wanted to know, well, what was the reason for strong marriages? Well, it comes down to number one reason, time together. Do you have a good relationship? If you want to make it better, spend time together.
Yeah.
Mind blowing, right?
Yeah, right.
We call
really
this
nuanced thought.
I'm going to be really deep here. But that's social science for you. A lot of duh research.
Yeah.
We do a lot of duh research, like, yeah, we knew that.
Well, it's not all that different than the ideal calendar, right? Of this concept of really easy to talk about, easy to understand, hard to execute. It takes a lot of intentionality. I'm thinking of, as we talk about this really getting on the same page with your spouse and operating as a partnership, it's almost like, I don't want to compare marriage to business, right? But there's this correlation of, you know, as I think about my work with my business partner, we would get nothing done if we didn't have a shared vision of where we're trying to take the business, right? We would be on totally different pages all the time. I'd be confused about why he's focused on the thing he's focused on, and he would be confused about why I'm spending energy or money on this other thing over here, right? And so I think what I hear you saying is, walk through this values process together. Walk through this ideal calendar process together. It doesn't mean that you're going to invest time in all of the same things, but you should be moving in the same direction together, right?
100%.
Yeah. What do you say to, you know, I know there's a lot of younger or established advisors that aren't married, that don't have a spouse to be part of this equation. Is there still some level of accountability or community that's important there?
Yeah, absolutely. And I will backtrack a little bit and say that a lot of personal development, there's a lot of coaches out there and they're doing great work. But the problem is they'll teach like an ideal calendar. They'll teach a process. And they almost want the client to turn to them forever. Like, I'm going to be your coach. I'm going to help you can do this forever. So my idea was, if not, not just as a support, but if spouses can be each other's coach, that is the skill I want to teach them.
Totally.
If they can do that, not only does their marriage and relationship grow, but now they can be there for each other. They don't need me ever again.
Yeah, it's interdependent, right?
Exactly.
It's a healthy marriage.
Yep. Yeah. And so the way that I look at, if I was successful with a client, was when I'm done teaching them this whole entire process after a few months, then they're able to be self-sufficient and they're a raving fan. That's great. Now, for those that don't, and I actually build this into a lot of the training that I do, you still have people that care about you. And so it may be a sibling. It may be a parent, although that there's kind of a power thing. Even if you're an adult, it's probably not
different
the right
dynamic thing.
A sibling might be a really good one if you have a good relationship. It can be an employee, but again, now that power situation is might be troubling. They might not be very open to. I like that you mentioned business partnerships, because a lot of businesses have partnerships. And yes, it is a lot like marriage. I do a lot of consulting with family-owned businesses because of that idea. And a lot of married people run businesses together, right? So that's kind of the duo dynamic there. So I would say find someone who's kind of at your same level business-wise, a colleague, a friend, a sibling, someone who's on that same path. Who's not looking to compete with you, or there's not a power struggle there, but they truly love you, then that is someone that you can confide in to say, hey, I want you to check up on me. I want you to help me, you know, until that spousal arrangement is discovered. You know, and a lot of people, most people, even if they are divorced, most people remarry. And so this is a great thing to even be thinking about before you get married. It's great marriage prep. And it's also great marriage enrichment to have this school.
I think that's such a powerful statement too. You know, Casey, my wife and I have been blessed with 2 years of marriage so far. So we got a
lot
that we don't know. That's right. That's right. But you know, we've had an amazing couple years of marriage, and I think a bit we think a big reason for that is that we got married a little bit later in life, not tremendously later. I was 27 when we got married.
Still younger than the average.
Yeah. Right. Right. So a little bit more like our generation, right?
Getting
married a few years maybe later than our than previous generations, but. In that, I think what was really helpful is we both kind of knew who we were. And as we were dating, we didn't shy away from who we were. We made it clear who we were. And yet we had really complementary visions of what we wanted for the future. So to go back to, you know, really identifying those values, really identifying that ideal calendar, I think what you just said is really important of if you are listening to this and you're an advisor who is single, who isn't even sure necessarily that you want to get married in the future, but open to that idea, or you're actively pursuing a spouse in a healthy way, right?
Right.
Side note, get off of Tinder.
Right.
cough. But I think,
don't
you know,
swipe right.
If you're, that's right. If you're on that trajectory and that is in your vision for the future is to be in a healthy marriage, I think what you just touched on is so important of having those values identified ahead of time, knowing the vision that you've cast for yourself, knowing what you ideally would want your calendar to look like, how you would want to invest your time, and going into a dating relationship or a marriage relationship with that kind of on the table and on the same page is such great practical advice. Again, sounds really simple, but so many couples don't do it, right? And you stick your head up a few years later and you go, why are we, we're like passing ships. We're like roommates. We're not in a true marriage. We're not partners in this deal. Why is that? It's because you never got on the same page.
That's it. And there's really three stages that I've identified. The one is, as you mentioned, it's the passing, it's two ships passing in the night. You're living solo lives together, right? The other is, they actually have a good relationship and they share, but they're not truly deeply sharing those values. So they, on the from the outside, it looks like, oh, that couple's doing great. They love each other, they like each other. Yeah, they do. But are they truly teammates? Are they actually doing those things that are gonna help each other because they love each other? And that can exist. That charitable type of love can exist in friendships. It can exist, you know, with siblings and family members, but it's just a deeper level when you're able to share of yourself in a marriage. It's the time where you truly can, and I know God can ordain that as a marriage. Like this is where you can be one. And so in that purpose, you can be one in each helping each other reach what their life's purposes are. And that's what I truly believe. This is the spiritual side. I truly believe that that's what God wants us to do with these relationships is we're here to help each other. Not just to have children, although that's good. That's great, and we should, and that's desirable, but really it's to help each other. And by the way, side note, the last study I ever did in psychology, my psychology degree, I was looking at all these motivators, and I found that the number one motivator for anyone in the United States of America, you remember Maslow's hierarchy of needs, the pyramid? Maslow said, no, this is self-actualization. This idea of living your purpose, right? Well, the reality is, that was back in 1950. That was his projected idea. 2012, they redid the study with evolutionary psychologists, abnormal psychologists, like a bunch of non-family related professionals. I preface this because the number one factor they found of motivating behavior, the number one thing that people wanted to do in life was actually to get married and have children. The number one. So I know that, yes, maybe people are getting married later. Maybe they think they won't ever get married, but I think that's a subject of our society kind of putting that pressure. Most people still deep down want to have a soulmate. They want, call it what you will, they want to have someone because it's innate in them. They desire that. So when we can use that natural desire to have those shared values achieved, and also this purpose that is our own values and goals achieved jointly, man, you just don't get happier than that.
Yeah, power couple goals.
That's it.
I love it.
That's right.
Well, Travis, Dr. Perry, as you picked up that doctorate along the way, this has been such a great conversation. I love just the simplicity of step one, really nailing those values. Step two, actualizing those values on your calendar. And then step three, getting in relationship and accountability, be it your spouse or a colleague and a friend that can help you hold you accountable to those values and really make sure that you're really moving yourself in that direction. I think just the simplicity of that structure is really powerful, but I know that the action behind it is easier said than done, right? So if folks do want to, other advisors out there do want to get in touch with you and work with you, which I would highly, highly recommend to anyone listening, what's the best place for them to get in touch with you?
Well, thanks, Kurt. It's www.travisperry, with an A, not with an E, travisperry.com. And they can download that article about how they can actually create their ideal calendar. That was actually printed in FPA's magazine a long time ago. It's no longer in print, but I have a copy of it. And they can learn anything they want to there. Schedule a phone call with me. I'm happy to go through and take, you know, a good 45 to 60 minutes to see what they're doing and maybe some things that they could tweak. I call it my make time discovery call, because it really is a discovery, and it's an opportunity for them to get some feedback. Most people that go through that call, they realize, my goodness, I've never had this conversation. And a lot of people end up, you know, getting really deep and emotional about things that they didn't realize were affecting their time management. I didn't mention this at all, but I will mention it now. A lot of us have limiting beliefs that kind of keep us captive. And I'm able to really just listen and ask the right questions to see what's keeping them from becoming as productive as they'd really like. So they leave that conversation, regardless if they become clients or not. I know that I've done them a service and they've been able to identify at least what they're up against. Because a lot of us listening, you know, a lot of listeners out there think, that's good, but, and they're filling in the blanks. That's what I want to help them with through that discovery call. So jump on that. You guys are welcome at travisperry.com. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm all over the place. So
it does not shock me that those conversations get vulnerable, because one of the things I've appreciated most about you in the short time that we've gotten to know each other is your vulnerability. So thank you for sharing your story. Thanks for sharing some advice with our audience. And I know I learned a lot. So hopefully some folks that are listening have some key takeaways there. And I hope that we get to chat again in the future.
Me too. Thanks, Kurt. Appreciate it.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you, my friends, for listening to the show. I hope you enjoyed hearing Travis's story a bit and had some cool takeaways on those three key ways that advisors can live their life on purpose. I would really encourage you to spend some time, especially on that first key way, of really identifying what are those values, what are the things that matter the most to you that are going to drive the way that you think about your business, your life, your relationships, and where you're spending your time. Special shout out to Travis. Thanks again for coming on the show, my friend, and looking forward to chatting with you again in the future. Talk soon.